When gliding by the Bashee Isles, we emerged at last upon the great South Sea. Were it not for other things, I could have greeted my dear Pacific with uncounted thanks. For now the long supplication of my youth was answered. That serene ocean rolled eastward from me 1,000 leagues of blue. There is, one knows not what sweet mystery about this sea, whose gently awful stirring seemed to speak of some hidden soul beneath. And meet it is that over these sea pastures, wide-rolling watery prairies and potter's fields of all four continents, the waves should rise and fall and ebb and flow unceasingly. For here millions of mixed shades and shadows, drowned dreams, somnambulisms, reveries, all that we call lives and souls lie dreaming, dreaming still, tossing like slumberers in their beds, the ever-rolling waves but made so by their restlessness. Availing himself of the mild, summer-cool weather that now reigned in these latitudes, and in preparation for the active pursuits shortly to be anticipated, Perth, the begrimed, blistered old blacksmith, had not removed his portable forge to the hold again, after concluding his contributory work for Ahab's leg, but still retained it on deck, fast lashed to ring-bolts by the foremast. Being now almost incessantly invoked by the headsmen and the harpooners and the bowsmen to do some little job for them, altering or repairing or new shaping their various weapons and boat furniture. With matted beard and swathed in a bristling sharkskin apron, about midday, Perth was standing between his forge and anvil, the latter placed upon an ironwood log, and with one hand holding a pike head in the coals, and with the other at his forge's lungs, when Captain Ahab came along, carrying in his hand a small, rusty-looking leathern bag. While yet a little distance from the forge, moody Ahab paused, till at last Perth, withdrawing his iron from the fire, began hammering it upon the anvil, the red mass sending off the sparks in thick, hovering flights, some of which flew close to Ahab. "Look ye here!" jingling the leathern bag, as if it were full of gold coins. "I, too, want a harpoon made. One that 1,000 yoke of fiends could not part, Perth. Something that will stick in a whale like his own fin bone. There's the stuff!" Flinging the pouch upon the anvil. "Look ye, blacksmith! These are the gathered nail stubs of the steel shoes of racing horses."
"Horseshoe stubs, sir?"
"Why, Captain Ahab, thou hast here, then, the best and stubbornest stuff we blacksmiths ever work."
"I know it, old man. These stubs will weld together like glue from the melted bones of murderers. Quick, forge me the harpoon, and forge me first 12 rods for its shank. Then wind and twist and hammer these 12 together, like the yarns and strands of a tow-line. Quick, I'll blow the fire."
When at last the 12 rods were made, Ahab tried them one by one by spiraling them, with his own hand, round a long, heavy iron bolt. "A flaw," rejecting the last one. "Work that over again, Perth." This done, Perth was about to begin welding the 12 into one when Ahab stayed his hand and said he would weld his own iron. As then, with regular gasping hems, he hammered on the anvil, Perth passing to him the glowing rods one after the other, and the hard-pressed forge shooting up its intense flame. Fedallah the Parsee passed silently, and bowing over his head towards the fire, seemed invoking some curse or some blessing on the toil. But as Ahab looked up, he slid aside. At last the shank in one complete rod received its final heat, and as Perth, to temper it, plunged it all hissing into the cask of water nearby, the scalding steam shot up into Ahab's bent face.
"Wouldst thou brand me, Perth?" wincing for a moment from the pain. "Have I been but forging my own branding iron, then?"
"Pray God, not that. Yet I fear something, Captain Ahab. Is not this harpoon for the white whale?"
for the white fiend, but now for the barbs. Thou must make them thyself, man. Here are my razors, the best of steel. Here, and make the barbs sharp as the needle sleet of the icy sea.
For a moment the old blacksmith eyed the razors as though he would fain not use them.
Take them, man, I have no need for them, for I now neither shave, sup, nor pray till... but here to work.
Fashioned at last into an arrowy shape, and welded by Perth to the shank, the steel soon pointed the end of the iron. And as the blacksmith was about giving the barbs their final heat, prior to tempering them, he cried to Ahab to place the water cask near.
No, no, no water for that. I want it of the true death temper. Ahoy there, Tashtego, Queequeg, Dagoo! What say ye, pagans? Will ye give me as much blood as will cover this barb?
Holding it high up, a cluster of dark nods replied, yes. 3 punctures were made in the heathen flesh, and the white whale's barbs were then tempered.
Ego non baptizo te in nomine patris, sed in nomine diaboli.
Deliriously howled Ahab as the malignant iron scorchingly devoured the baptismal blood. Now, mustering the spare poles from below and selecting one of hickory, with the bark still investing it, Ahab fitted the end to the socket of the iron. A coil of new towline was then unwound, and some fathoms of it taken to the windlass and stretched to a great tension. Pressing his foot upon it till the rope hummed like a harp string, then eagerly bending over it and seeing no strandings, Ahab exclaimed,
"Good! And now for the seizings!"
At one extremity the rope was unstranded, and the separate spread yarns were all braided and woven round the socket of the harpoon. The pole was then driven hard up into the socket. From the lower end the rope was traced halfway along the pole's length, and firmly secured so, with intertwistings of twine. This done, pole, iron, and rope, like the 3 fates, remained inseparable, and Ahab moodily stalked away with the weapon, the sound of his ivory leg and the sound of the hickory pole, both hollowly ringing along every plank.